Welcome to Nell and Matt's Obsolete Movies, the podcast where we revisit movies from our 20-plus years of collecting films on what are now obsolete formats. Another way of thinking about this podcast is we review films from the VHS era, though not all the films are necessarily on VHS. Though we're having a little VHS streak, I think, going. Maybe the next film we should get bust out a laser disc or something. Our films for this episode are American Movie and Coven. It's a special double feature because, of course, Mike Shank of American Movie passed away just last week. And just been kind of thinking about American Movie and Coven. And, yeah.
And so, it's spooky season.
So. And it's spooky season, so there is a horror movie. We have them both on VHS. Getting my VHS, our VHS copy of American Movie from eBay because somebody borrowed our VHS copy of American Movie that we bought from Hollywood Video and never returned it. And the copy of Coven we got was actually the Heads Together copy that I bought, and it is autographed by Mr. Mark Borchardt as they all were. And I believe, actually, he said his dream was to sell 3,000 of these, and I think this is number 2,391.
I believe he ended up selling over 5,000, so...
Good for him.
Yeah.
Good for him. So, those of you who don't, I guess the uninitiated, we have to explain, I guess, now two movies before we get into our analysis.
Because they're connected.
They are connected. So, American Movie is a documentary directed by... Chris Smith and Sarah Price. Thankfully, the box is right here. Chris Smith and Sarah Price. That is about the making of, well, Coven. Originally, it was about the making of this film Mark Borchardt dreamed of making, called Northwestern, which still hasn't been made.
Right.
Which was supposed to be sort of his equivalent of the great American novel, the great American movie. He decided instead to finish his horror project, short project, Coven, so that he could raise the money for Northwestern. And American Movie is this hilarious,
touching,
heartfelt, touching, unadorned in some cases, portrayal of the production of Coven and these two characters, mostly Mark, but also Mike, these two friends... And a few other friends, family, whoever else Mark could talk into helping with his movie. Some nice community theater actors from North Milwaukee in making this film.
Yes.
And it won the Grand Jury Prize in Sundance in 1999. We, I think, have been fans of the movie for, I mean, the first time I saw it, it was one of two films, I believe, that I stopped the tape. Because I was laughing so hard that I knew that I was going to miss the next 20 minutes. That is the, those of you who have seen the American movie, and those of you who haven't, the kitchen cabinet scene is set up so brilliantly. Because part of I think what is so exciting, I think for me being ironically distant, like, look at those people making mistakes.
Yeah.
But now, I think 20-some years into a life of DIY, friends who do DIY, my other podcast was just a podcast of two friends or a friend that made a movie with his friends that took 15 years to complete. What can go wrong will go wrong, and what you don't know, you will find out you don't know when it is way too late to find out what you don't know. And that is the story of American
Movie.
Wait,
and literally and figuratively, in the case of the cabinet, that you've hit a hard place.
Yes, you've hit a hard place. And it's the second time they shot that scene, too.
See, my favorite part is the poor actor who was like, I hope we don't have to shoot this again. And they shoot it again.
That was part of the setup. It was so brilliant. And then you have this ethics of the friend who's like, look, I made it so that it's going to... And it's going to break. Like, and then you look at it and you're like, you didn't do that right.
You didn't even
do that close to right. Oh, my Lord. I mean, it was a joke, but it was a Wile E. Coyote cartoon joke where you know the Acme rocket skates are not going to work and they look down.
And that you would use balsa wood or another soft wood.
Yes, or you would cut
deeper.
Almost yeah. fully through yeah. the kitchen cabinet door before... Anyway, so there's all of that. There's also, I think with American Movie, that you have these people who are, you know, they're not rich people. They are working class Americans.
Yeah.
Americans who maybe have had problems in the past and are having problems right now, who have complicated lives, who kind of do believe they have that puncher's chance. Like, we're going to make the movie, that we're going to become yeah. stars. And
which actually at the time wasn't that far-fetched, right? Because you had Slacker come out in 1990.
Kevin Smith with Clerks.
With Clerks.
Which was a movie made on credit cards.
Jim Jarmusch was doing these low budget films. A film that no one knows called Green that we really loved.
That we loved was done on a very slim budget. Yeah. I mean, slightly later, around the same time as American Movie came out, Blair Witch Project.
Yeah, made for nothing.
Made for $36,000.
You know, I actually had that thought, like, what if he actually kind of had fallen into the found footage horror film, right? Which would have been easier to make.
But part of what makes Mark as a person / character fascinating is that he... so ambitious. I mean, really believed he wanted to be an auteur, not just a director, but an auteur director.
Right.
And so kind of talks this game and has this vision. And when we get to talking about, like, Coven as a movie, we can assess his abilities, I guess, as a director. But that's part of the charm of it, and that's part of the irony of it, and that's part of what's amusing about it, is these big dreams, yeah. but... execution. Yeah. And so in 1999, and this film was shot between 1994 and 1997.
Yeah.
The making of Coven was over 3 years
right.
long.
For a 30-minute film.
For a 30-minute film.
Or 35-minute film, whatever it was.
35-minute short. And I think in 99, I think for a lot of people, I mean, I think there was just this great irony. I mean, there was also an element of... were Mark and Mike the real-life Beavis and Butthead?
In some ways, yes.
In some ways, yeah. You know, that, and there was a lot of jokes about, oh, look at them, you know, they're doing crazy stuff, or they're doing weird stuff, or they're not very sophisticated people. And that was a big part of the joke, and I know some folks who actually kind of knew, got to know Mark a little bit, and was very... I think he realized the way he came off in the film and was very taken back and has become... a much more private person because the world saw him at some ugly moments in his life, too.
Right. And so the director of American Film went on to do Tiger King. So that would probably be his most popular big one right now. But the parallel is that he catches some people sometimes at not their best. That's what American Movie for me, he kind of catches Mark at his best and his worst. And I think that's kind of like for Tiger King, the same thing, right? That kind of parallel, the best and the worst. And so Mark is a fascinating character, person, because it's a documentary. He dropped out of high school, and his father mentions that actually, like, IQ-wise, he's a very intelligent person. His mom says he dropped out of high school because he was bored and felt like he couldn't learn, and then he went on to the military. And there's one scene where they're in his room and he just has a ton of books about film theory. He has, you know, Spike Lee books. And so he's obviously well-read. And he wants to be a good artist and is trying his best with the limited access that he has to do it. And so he's dreaming big. He talks the talk really well. But he doesn't necessarily have, like, the organizational skills,
experience
to make it happen.
Or money. I mean, that's the other thing is for a film with no budget. For a film with a budget, you can solve a lot of problems with an American Express black card.
Right.
That's in the studio's name.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you just can. And they don't have those luxuries. It's also just his sheer force of will, gumption, willing to sacrifice maybe everything in his life.
Yes, and
including his own well-being
and relationships.
And relationships in order to make this movie. Mm-hmm. So of course we're seeing this movie. Now we're revisiting this film in the 2020s. And mostly because Mike Shank, the guitar playing friend, the best bud, passed away last week.
Yeah.
Of cancer, and it's sad. I mean, you know,
I have to say, and you know, I mean, partially it's because knowing that Mike died, but he's like unwavering in his love and friendship for Mark. Like he
yes.
just is there to support him no matter what. So if he needs an extra in the middle of a cold winter forest, Mike's
in,
there.
In Wisconsin.
In Wisconsin. Mike is there. If he needs some backing music, Mike is there. If he needs a buddy to hang out with him, Mike is there. If he needs someone to score, to put wax X marks on film, Mike is there. He's like unwavering in his love for Mark.
Yeah.
And also tolerates some abuse from Mark too as well, yeah. right? But I think there's this funny, charming scene where Mike shows up to visit Mark and he's smiling. And everyone's trying to figure out why. And he was like, I want some money. I don't want Mark to know because he'll want it.
Yeah.
And it's just this. And he's not wrong.
And he's not wrong. And also, I think he would be very resistant to say no.
Yeah.
To Mark.
Mark is this very... Mark.
He's an operator.
He's an operator. Yeah. He knows how to pitch.
Yeah.
His brother says it. He's good with his words. He does know how to work a room.
Yeah.
For me, the uncle, that dynamic kind of.
Yeah. So there's strange. Also this, you know, there's this uncle who apparently, I guess, is probably. Sort of pickled his brain a bit with drink and lives in a trailer and has money. And Mark knows this and
has a few $100,000.
Yes, and is constantly working his uncle to try to get him to give him a 5-digit amount of money to shoot Northwestern. He gets a four-digit amount of money, I should say, to finish Coven.
Right.
And he calls him the executive producer, and he tries to, like, play with his, what did you do with your life? You gotta do something with your life. Let's make this movie. You know? kind of thing. But it's also, I want to talk about the title, and I want to talk a little bit more about Mike, but I also want to talk about the title, and about how it's truly an American story, A, because everybody has the puncher's chance to be champ. Mm-hmm. Everybody... There's part of just the American social fabric that everybody thinks, I'm just one shot away. I just haven't been discovered yet. It's just, I'm going to get a break. I'm going to do a thing, and I'm going to be everything. I'm going to be so famous and wealthy. I think there's that. I think there's also the way that, you know, this film captures what, you know, was later called Flyover America, Middle America. And just all of those people who lived their lives, had their jobs, and just have hours of nothing. You know, and they just have days. Days that turn into weeks, that turn into months, that turn into years. And this is also, in many ways, a chronicle of all of those folks who, you know, that's what they're doing.
Yeah. And also, that sense of being an eager... ambitious filmmaker, right?
Yeah.
And you hear the stories of, you know, Steven Spielberg starting very young with a camera.
Yeah.
And like, how many of those stories come out? Like, I was a kid with a camera.
Quentin Tarantino at the movie store, at the video store.
Yeah.
Sam Raimi and his friends making movies that eventually one of those turned out to be Evil Dead.
Right. And there is something, for Americans endearing about that. Like, a kid with his camera suddenly becomes an adult with his camera who's making these powerful films.
Yeah.
And it's because we have such strong emotional ties to many of those films. I mean, I'm not a fan of Steven Spielberg, but I love Evil Dead, right? And so the thought of Sam Raimi out in the woods with his friends making this film. So it just brings a smile to my face. And then camaraderie, right? We all want that sense of having a group and a purpose and being able to have our 15 minutes of fame. You know, since we are the land of Pittsburgh and Warhol, everybody wants to have their 15 minutes of fame.
Yeah. So, Coven. Do you want to talk about Coven?
Well, yeah. So I guess to wrap up American movie a little bit. So, they follow him, Mark, as he's trying to make these films. He also has substance abuse issues. And so, there's times where he's not so nice, Mark, where he can...
Yeah, he could kind of come off as a mean drunk
Yeah, there's times he comes off as a mean drunk. And there's times that you're, like, feel a little bit ooky about how he's trying to get his uncle to give him money. But there's also that sense of, like, you're happy for him that he finally finishes a product. Though it's not the one he wanted, at least he gets to the point of finishing Coven. We all know it's supposed to be Coven, but Mark does not know
that
it's...
I mean, which, again, is, I think, part of the irony, or there's a little bit of a... For me, looking back, that, like, part of the joke of the film is that these are not very sophisticated people. That these are, you know, and that Mark is, you know, smart but unschooled.
Right.
And so, C-O-V-E-N is the name of the movie, but, you know, he calls it Coven because he also probably only read the book, read the word Coven. He never heard someone else say it.
Yeah.
Which is when people mispronounce words is because you've read it, you haven't heard it.
And his, the one actor, they're having a discussion about it, and the actor says it's Coven. And he goes, well, that's stupid.
That sounds like Oven.
That sounds like Oven. So that's also the humor around
Yeah, I mean, that's part of the humor of it, too. But it's also, it's like, is it having fun? I looking back at the movie now, at American Movie Now, is this question of, for me, is it having fun with or making fun of?
Right, and I think that's a really... Well, I mean, to go back to Tiger King, right, there was some... The questions around that as well. Was he making...
Yeah, but you know what? Those people were rich, awful people. I think it's one thing...
Well, no, like, no. I mean, in terms of Tiger King, of, like, some of the employees and things like that.
Yeah, that's true.
That there was some kind of question of, were they taken advantage of? Were they made fun of? In terms of the Tiger King, who cares? He is who he is, and those other people are who they are. But yeah, so that's true. I mean, there is that kind of looking back at it now, this question of, are they making fun of, or are they part of the joke with it?
Yeah. Yeah, so Coven. The direct to market for approximately 40 minute black and white film. I love the DVD, the VHS box, not DVD box. The hard-drinking, pill-popping writer overdoses only to find himself thrust into the evil world of a self-support group. Coven features an ensemble cast of quirky characters, macabre humor, and is American as Ma's apple pie and crack cocaine.
So, Mark wrote, directed, produced, and starred
in
the film. So he did everything he could possibly do in the film, besides write the music for it.
Yes. Shot it, edited it, everything he could do.
So the funny thing for me is, like, right now, especially, I'm hugely into docuseries, and there's been a lot of, like, cult films lately surrounding self-help, right? So there's been Nexium, there's been other things. So he kind of gets it right that can there be, like, this nefarious nature to some of these self-help groups and some of these people who are purporting to help you but are absolutely trying to take advantage of you?
Yes. Which, there's also the way that the film, you know, there's these amazing, these interesting dream sequences in Coven.
Yeah.
And there's also this question of whether, you know, the Mike character from Coven, which is really Mark, in some ways playing himself, is, you know, his own fear and anxieties and his love of his own addictions and his resistance to getting better versus these people who are maybe trying to help him but maybe are also involved in some other nefarious thing. And there's a nice element of mystery in the film.
Yeah.
Which is like what's inside of Mike's head and what's legitimately happening. Scary. And the way that the film ends, where of course Mike then lashes out at two members of the group, you know, you wonder, there's a nice ambiguity at the end of the film.
I should mention there's a scene in the film where he's in his car and there's cult members dressed in black robes surrounding the car, smashing it, which made it to subreddit as a potential, like, actual cult attacking a person. And I actually saw it, I think it was like on Slapped Ham showing like creepy photos, and I when I saw it I was like, that's COVID. what do they do?
But yeah. Which that scene itself is this weird non sequitur.
Yeah.
You know, he just kind of drives to the empty drive-in, and then there's people in hoods, and they're smashing his car, and
yeah. Well,
then there's not.
But it is a creepy scene.
It is a very creepy scene.
It is well done, and so much so that people were like, "Oh, this is a photo of an actual."
And so yeah, and so here is the thing about Coven is there are some really nice shots. I wonder if, I know he sold 5,000 copies, if a number of the scenes of the film were not completely overexposed or completely underexposed, especially underexposed. There are scenes, interior shots where, and granted, this was also a rental copy. Also, this is a SLP, like the super slow speed tape.
Yeah.
You know, so they tried to use as little magnetic tape as possible. In fact, the wheels, the reels in the VHS tape are the gigantic kind to make it seem like you're getting more. If the film looked a little better, if the film was properly exposed in many of the shots, independent films that we've seen with a lot less going for them have done a lot more than Coven.
Right.
And so, again, it's super close to being a very good, spooky little movie.
Well, you know, I will say, just because, because it was like 3 years, so he has different hairstyles, like you noticed.
Yeah, you have continuity errors. There's also this great tension in, you know, he's shooting Coven year-round.
Yeah.
Though
it's set in the winter.
It's set in the winter, but then there's times where there's birds and it's summer and there's leaves on the trees, because he just needed to reshoot that scene because he didn't get it right the first time.
And some scenes are so dark, it's kind of distracting.
Yeah, some interior scenes where you just kind of get people's faces.
Yeah, there's
the outline of people's faces in white, and then everything else is dark.
There's one scene where it's so super dark, and then they go outside, and it's so super bright, and I'm like, whoa, wait.
Yeah, so like, I mean, it's one of those things where you know, the things that you notice about the film in even a kind of bad Hollywood film, you know, at least they get exposure right.
Right.
And so, which is, I think, unfortunate, because I think, again, there's some cool shots in this film. There's some cool atmospheric music. You do get a lingering sense of dread. I think his imagination in terms of horror is fascinating. You know, one of the dream sequences, he's like being drugged through a pond, you know, and it's genuinely horrifying looking.
Yeah.
And again, there's a lot of making virtue out of necessity with the film.
Yeah, and the scene, I think like the scene in the elevator with the, like, woman who starts convulsing.
That's so well shot.
I was hoping for, in some ways, it like he was trying to get a Carnival of Souls type of vibe.
Yeah, which I think he does.
Where you're not too sure what's real, what's not real, what's in his head, what's not in his head. You know, I at one moment in time, I was like, you know, like Carnival of Souls, like, oh, is he dead and is he going through like limbo or some like levels of hell? You know, the way it ends, you're not, probably not, but I think you could tell he was trying to explore kind of that fantasy reality, dichotomy, which was interesting. It was definitely interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, anything else before we move on to the four big questions?
I think we're ready for it.
I think we're ready for it. All right. So, I guess we have to answer one of these, but for both films, for Covenant, American Movie, are they camp, retro, classic, or just old movies?
So I think American Movie is a classic. Like, yeah. I do think there's definitely a poignancy to that film that's very interesting.
Yeah. And I think it also maybe is a predecessor of that turn towards reality TV.
Yeah.
You know, there was The Real World on MTV in the 90s.
Right.
But you think now, you know, we still fall into a little bit of Intervention and Hoarders on YouTube that we watch that normal people's lives, especially eccentric people, eccentric average people, I should say, people's lives are just, we know so much more, we see so much more of them.
Yeah.
And there was a novelty, I think, to American Movie in 99 that, yeah, this is what Wisconsin's like.
Yeah, and we didn't know about Grey Gardens just at that
point. We didn't know Grey Gardens yet, yeah.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I feel like that you don't have to be rich and famous to have value to your story, right? And so,
yeah.
And I think Mark's desire, such a strong desire to be a filmmaker, and the lengths he goes to do it, and he does it. He makes a film. And not everyone can say that they've made a film. And he's gone on to do other things, like he's done music videos, he's starting yes. films. So he's gone on to do other things. He's never made his great American
He never
film.
Made American Northwestern. There's a couple, at least Wikipedia lists, I think one or two other projects that were started yeah. and never completed. Though do watch the Tenement video for Garden of Secrets.
Yeah.
Because they're a good band.
And I think he has a documentary out about UFOs.
Yeah.
But I do think it's a classic, and I do think there's value to it. So COVID is a hard one because it can be very campy in some ways.
Yeah.
I don't know if I necessarily call it a classic, but I'm not too sure where to
see, lay. I think it's maybe a cult classic. Mm. I think everybody should see COVID at least once.
Mm.
I think also
well, you should see both.
You should see both. You really should see both. Though I guess American Movie can be a little hard to come by.
Yeah.
As is COVID now at
though
this point.
I think Shudder had it for a little while. American. Why Shudder of all places had American Movie?
Well, it's
movie.
About making a horror movie.
Oh, that's true. So Shudder, I don't know if they, I think they still have it.
And I think it is streaming. Also a, you know, COVID is a testament, I think, of a time and a place and a way of movie making.
Yeah.
And, you know, how many other amateur films are out there. And maybe is it for, honestly, for, like, no-budget DIY films, is COVID the Citizen Kane? No-budget DIY horror shorts.
Yeah.
I think it is.
Gotcha.
I think it is. There's a lot of qualifiers, and there's maybe damning with faint praise there, but I think it's a cult classic in that sense. And it's a nice moments, and it looks nice. There's parts of the film, we talk about exposure or overexposure, there's also some really good shots in that movie,
mm-hmm.
and some creepy things.
So were the shots his mom took, or that he took? Which one, I wonder.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, question two, what about the social political distance, the Bechdel test?
Yeah, I mean, so it's filmed in the 90s. Like, we actually had this conversation right after watching it, that if he was in his 20s or 30s now, he would just be on TikTok or Instagram filming with his cell phone.
And he would, yeah, I mean, the tools would actually be that much more accessible.
Yeah.
I mean, you, even just buying used flip cams.
Right.
If it was 10 years later, he would have little flip cams.
Right.
I mean, you think one of our favorite movies of previous year that we saw at the Cleveland Film Festival, Midnight Family, was all shot. It was a documentary all shot on iPhones, and
yeah.
it looks
So good.
So good. See Midnight Family, by the way.
Amazing. It's amazing.
Midnight Traveler. Actually, see Midnight Family, which was shot on GoPros, or Midnight Traveler, which was shot on iPhones.
Yeah.
Both of those documentaries about families in crisis in extreme situations.
Really good.
Really good. And again, shot with things that you could buy at Walmart.
Yeah. So I it would be like if he was born now, or if he was in his 20s, 30s now, it would be so different. But would he be trying to make a film, or would he just be trying to do things to get attention on TikTok?
Yeah, right? Which is, I think, unfortunate because, you know, it's so much cooler to make a film.
Yeah.
And you're right. Today's Mark Borchardt would make a short, would make a 90-second thing, and that could be it. Or,
And he's so, like, for me, it's also, like, this weird, like, he's, like, out of time. Like, he's not of his time, but he is of his time, but he was slightly ahead of his time. He's kind of like this weird, because at the time in the 90s...
I mean, he's trying to... I think that's part of the tension of him. He is a broken visionary.
Yeah.
He's a visionary who needs, like, bifocals.
Right. No, that's true. That's right. I mean, you know, like, as we said at the beginning, there was a lot of 90s filmmakers who are huge now.
Yeah.
Who were making low-budget films. And, yeah, so, like, the 90s was the time to do that. And then also, as I mentioned, I do feel like thinking about cults, which are so huge right now, and all this other stuff, it's like in some ways he was just, like, slightly...
Yeah, I think slightly clairvoyant.
Yeah.
I think for me also, you know, going back, we were talking, and I think part of, like, the tension of, say, a movie like Clerks in the 90s, we were really, like, the economy had changed, Reagan had happened, a lot of people got left behind, and I think, again, there's a butt of a, poor people, look at those poor people on American movie kind of thing. Which I think we're over that now, hopefully, or at least I know our peer group is over that and would not find that funny in that way anymore. I think there's also a way, and let's face it, because we all have pocket computers that connect to all the information in the world. It's much... One of the things I was thinking about when we were rewatching American Movie last night before rewatching Coven tonight is people were... You could fake being sophisticated and fashionable now in ways that you couldn't in the 90s.
This is true.
You know, now somebody has a good idea or a nice way of speaking or carrying themselves or fashion sense or whatever. You're aware of it.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, I think about our own lives living in a rural area in the 90s as the American movie was being shot. The only tool you might have had maybe is your own imagination.
Yeah.
And what you could get at Goodwill or something. And I think that's also a way it captures a time and a place that's very different.
Well, I also think, well, your areas of research relate to this, but also in the sense of, like, there's this problem in America that we can't name, right? Yeah. And a lot of it is people not being able to have stable jobs. Like, there's not industry like there used to be in the past. There isn't a sense of, like, you could at one point in time be a high school dropout, maybe get a nice paying job at an auto factory and
or a steel mill
be able to afford a home, be able to afford a family, and be fine. And that's just, like, not the case anymore.
Yeah.
So also for me, watching American Movie, it was like, oh, that's a part of the problem. Like, his friends and, Mark struggled with having a stable job. Mike struggled with having a stable job. There was poverty that was happening around them. And so you look at it and you say, wow, like, this problem that we feel like is a problem now was a problem in the 90s that we just really weren't talking about.
Or that really we were, I mean, buying into just actively trying to avoid. I mean, we went to expensive Catholic liberal arts college to avoid having those types of jobs. And, you know, we were able to sort of, you know, float above it or hopefully, you know, try to avoid it.
Yeah.
As, you know, that was the thing that was the most terrifying thing. And you know, if you were a young person, that was slipping through the cracks.
Yeah.
You know, but you realize post-pandemic, like, those jobs are, the jobs that people have are all real jobs.
They're all real jobs. They're all important. And I think, you know, I think for Mark, it's like he needed to pay the rent and he's paying the rent. But on top of that, he's having this whole artistic life.
Yeah.
And how many people in our lives do we know as well that they're like, this job helps me
do the thing that is the thing that I really do. I mean, which, yeah, I guess is the other, you know, thing where he's a predecessor, you know, is that DIY culture hasn't taken over. I mean, corporate culture is still a thing, but you also have platforms like Bandcamp, SoundCloud, YouTube,
right,
that if you want to make art on your own or art with your friends, you know, there's a whole vibrant music scene in Pittsburgh that is all DIY, that, yeah, has no external support other than the support and love that people in the community give to it.
Yeah.
I mean, even the world of on-demand publishing, even if it's through the giant evil Borg Corporation,
right,
it has allowed people to, like, I want to make books. I want to publish an anthology. I want to, yeah, do this.
So how different would, like, Mark's life been if there was YouTube at that time, right? Like, I'm just getting,
yeah,
his,
yeah, I mean,
stuff,
how many, his, yeah,
ether,
his shorts that, you know, he could have also easily had the tools to fix the overexposure in Coven,
right,
in post,
yeah,
with a filter. I mean, OpenShot or Apple Movie.
Yeah.
You can just do it.
Right.
I've made movies in OpenShot. It's freeware. Audacity is freeware.
Right.
If you want to do sound engineering. So you also get a bit of a historical document in terms of the struggle. But people also can fake being smart and sophisticated in ways that you couldn't in 1990-something.
Yeah.
So the technical distance.
I think we just
talked. Which we just talked about. I think we talked about it.
We unfortunately blurred the kind
we
of...
We blurred the lines.
We blurred the lines between our questions.
So the last question, are they keepers?
Yeah, I mean,
absolutely.
Of course. I mean, of course. Like, they're ones that we will pull out again and again and watch.
And thought about. And honestly, when I realized that someone borrowed my copy of American Movie and never returned it.
Yeah.
That was... And that's a one hard one to find on eBay for a decent price. And I did, though the case is slightly damaged. I really wanted to have that back.
Yeah.
I went through great lengths of trying to find that back. So it's definitely a keeper. And again, it's also, and I just want to say the other thing, especially reading the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's obituary story on Mike Shank, was someone who, you know, he had his issues with addiction early in life. Actually, his last tweet was that he was celebrating 27 years sober.
Yeah.
And that he dedicated the most of the rest of his time on Earth actually helping other people.
Yeah.
And as much as actually Coven is about an addiction recovery group turned cult gone bad, Mike helped in Milwaukee set up a group for people and tried to help people to get out of that world, which is kind of amazing. And they were amazing people. They are. Mark Borchardt is still, I think, an amazing person. And,
yeah,
you know, do what you do.
Absolutely.
Rest in peace, Mike. Bye.